You know, if you, I just think what we're going through here, this kind of chronological study, if I can't think of a better thing, way to approach this, both from two perspectives. One, if you knew nothing of God, if you knew nothing of how, what He intends for man, and what He intends for this world, then if you are absolutely never been exposed at all, then this is an ideal thing. But it's also ideal if you have much exposure, and you've studied, and you've been to church, and you've heard these things, but to organize in your mind what God is doing in the world. If you want to join Him, and if you believe that you were made to join God and His purposes in the world, what better thing could you do than to clearly, definitively understand who God is and what He's about in this world? Automatically, what does that do for you? It gives you purpose. It fills that thing in you to know God and to be about some significant purpose in this world. Can you acknowledge to yourself, even if you know nothing of God, that you were made for this sort of thing? You're made for this. You're going to find something to live for. You're going to find some purpose, some meaning, or at least you're going to search for it and decide that there's nothing there or that there is something there. So this gives the answer for that, for some of the biggest questions that we have in life. Now, it doesn't work like this. Oh, I'm struggling in my marriage, or I have this relationship at work, and I need this quick fix. That's not what this is. I'm not saying that's wrong. There's some Sundays we'll come together and there'll be a quick fix for things. It's like, this is what God's Word says about this, and this is what it says about that. But that's not really what we're doing. This is, in a sense, bigger. It's not as pointed as that, but it's bigger than that. So this is kind of where we've been so far. We looked at this first and said, what is this book that we have in our hand that people claim and call the Word of God? Where does it come from? Can it be trusted? And how do we get it from this ancient book and these documents? Where does this come from? So we answered those questions on the very first thing, because that's what we're looking at. So we made a logical, even you almost unbiased, we're biased, but almost unbiased, look at, is this thing trustworthy? Can we trust it? And then we looked at, the next topic was, who is this God that claims to have sent us this message? Who is this God? What's He like? And we talked about this thing of God, how God made us and made us for a reason and purpose, and how He made us. And those things help us to understand and give us this, can we really know this God, the Creator of everything? Can we know Him? And how would we go about that? And this will impact everything you do in life, from your career, your family, where you spend eternity. All it impacts everything. So the week before, remember, we left Adam and Eve. The week before, we left Adam and Eve. And we mentioned, sometimes we'll delve into little offshoots of science and genetics and those types of things, that to understand that this is real, that there's a legitimate scientific human basis, not just a spiritual basis for the things that we believe. And we left this thing of Adam and Eve, this man and this woman in this perfect relationship. Everything was just, they were in this perfect relationship with one another, no baggage, no guilt. Their environment was perfect. Everything, they were in a perfect relationship with God. Everything was perfect. And you remember, though, when God made all this and He told Adam, you can eat from any tree in the garden. You can eat from this special tree, the tree of life. Eat and live. And the significance, the implication there was, you eat from this tree, the tree of life, and you will have eternity. It's like the fountain of youth, this thing, you'll live forever. And it's not make-believe. You know, death is foreign to us. Does that feel comfortable? But does that feel like, you know, your parents, they may have lived a good life, they may have followed God, but still, when it comes time for people close to you to die, I don't like that. You know, that feels like I struggle against this thing of death. I struggle against it. It's going to get me. It's going to get you. But it was not our design. It's not what God made. And he told Adam, eat from the tree of life and you will live. You can eat from any tree of the garden. But there is this one tree that you must not eat from. It is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And if you eat from this tree, you will surely... What? What does that tell you? Tell me this. What's the punishment for sin? Death. Is that not ridiculous? I can remember as a child even being exposed to these things and thinking, that doesn't seem very fair. Now does it? Eat one bite of fruit? You know, Kathleen came in with that big old bowl of grapes. Are you supposed to be carrying something that heavy? And she came in with this big old grapes. And my immediate thing was, I want some of those. And I grabbed some. She didn't give me permission. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't have eaten those, you know, and got them before you guys. Maybe that was wrong. Am I going to have to face death after church because I ate the grapes? But you know what? God told me. Just tell me, does that seem fair to you? Now, maybe if he committed murder, maybe if there was some other woman that had been created around there somewhere and he committed adultery, I can understand that. But for eating fruit from a tree, death? Death? Oh, well, let's talk about death just for a second. What are the three kinds of death? You guys remember? Three kinds. Physical death. I had trouble with that when I was a kid. I can remember my problem, my issues with all these things. He ate from the tree. He didn't drop dead. What are you talking about, God? He lived another, 850-something years? I don't know. He didn't die. Well, it's like you go out here and you tear a pine off of a pine tree. You take the limb off. You lay it here. It looks fine for quite a few weeks. We've done this before. We teach. We go through the weeks. It looks fine. All of a sudden, we come back one week. It's brown. It really is dead because it was taken from its life source. And it did die. It was separated from its life source. Physical death. What's the other kind of death? Spiritual death. There was an instantaneous death in this case because the relationship was separated. What does death mean all through the Bible? Does death ever mean cease to exist? No knowledge. Nothing. Does not mean that. It means separation. Just like the spirit separated from the body. That is physical death. Death of a relationship. They became separated from God. That relationship was done for. It was done for. God wasn't through dealing with them, talking to them, but the relationship was dead. Then there was the third kind of death. Do you remember what that was? Oh, this one's hard. Eternal death? Yeah, eternal death. Forever separated from joy, purpose, and meaning, and love, and God. Separate, eternal separation. Those were the three kinds of death. Now, that really doesn't seem fair. We're eating fruit from a tree to face that serious of death. Well, you see, God gave man a choice. He gave him a choice. Follow me and live. You go your own way. You do what you think is right. You be your own God. And that's the choice you make. The punishment for that is death, to go your own way apart from God. And that's what Adam faced, and Adam and Eve faced. And so, we know what happened, right? They did it. You know, they didn't have to. There's all kinds of stories floating around. There's all kinds of theologies going around. Who would have known if they hadn't? I don't know the end result. We're not told that. But they did not have to do that. They had a choice. A legitimate, real choice. They chose to follow themselves. They chose to follow the enemy, Lucifer, instead of following God. The result of that was death. So, then follow this curse, this thing of things. Do you know, if you picture in your mind on the Serengeti plains of Africa, there is a lion somewhere out there. He's creeping, and he's looking, and there's a gazelle. Maybe it's a baby. Can't run very fast. That's his target. He sprints out of the brush. The baby gazelle runs, stands not a chance. Gets dragged down, not by one, but by three, four, five lions, and gets eaten. That's not pretty, is it? Don't pretend that it is. It's not. It's not pretty. It's ugly. Well, you think, oh, it's just the circle of the cycle of life, and that's how things... Well, it is how things work, but that was not the original intent. That was not God's original design. That is the result of sin. Now, we are given a way to deal with all these things. And that is what we're going to get to. How do we deal with all this? You know, do you have this... I know you have this desire. You want to get back to the Garden of Eden. I do too. This peace. Peace. I want to work. I don't want to work that hard, though. I don't want to pull weeds. I don't want thorns. You know, I want to have a relationship, but I don't want it to be so hard. I want to have peace with God. That's the Garden of Eden. That's what we want. We want to go back to that. Now, there is a day. God has made a way. We're not getting to it yet. Now, there is a way, even in this life, where we can go back, we can approach that, where there can be peace. There can be a reconciliation. And that is the message that God has sent us. And you think that you understand it. Sometimes I think I understand it. Then every time I go back and I read through the Old Testament, I realize I didn't quite get the depth of this. Why did God spend so much? The New Testament is very small. The Old Testament is huge. God wants us to understand this. If you want to feel better, you don't feel good. You want to feel better. Well, I don't want to go through that process of going to the doctor and getting diagnostic and go and get the MRI and go through all this long process. And I don't want to do that. But you know what? If you want to get well, you'll take the time and you'll go through all that process, won't you, Kathleen? You'll do it. It's not fun. This is not fun either. If you want to get well, if you want to have peace, if you want to have purpose, if you want to have meaning, if you want to love, you need to understand the sickness. If you want the cure, you've got to understand the sickness. The Old Testament, over and over and over, it tells you what's wrong. This is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. You want to get well? You want to get well? Then this is... We got to go through this process. Got to get the MRIs. Got to get the test. Got to get the blood test. Got to go through this. So that's what we're doing today. We're going to start. We're working through this. One more brick in the wall of trying to understand this. So from last week, we were introduced to this enemy, Lucifer. So we had to reach up ahead and gather some information. Who is he? He was an angel. God created him. He had this special place in God's presence. But remember when he first said, I am, I am, I am. Pride brought him down. He was trying to replace God. And then he kind of, remember, influenced Adam and Eve. What was one of the methods he used to influence them? Do you guys remember that? How did he influence them? What's one of the first things he did to influence them? What's that? He twisted it. You know, he didn't take it away. He didn't completely change it. He just put a little twist to it to make them misunderstand. He made them doubt God. He made them want to be in control of their own lives, to make them little gods, if you would. So, you remember when they finally did disobey God? How did they feel? What was their response? Shame. I really want you to get a feel for this. We're numb to this. You know, I say something wrong to Lori, I lose my temper. I say something wrong to somebody else, or I have a bad thought. I think, oh, I shouldn't have thought that. Yeah, I shouldn't have thought that. It doesn't take me to my knees, not really. I just shouldn't have thought it. You know, why? I've done a lot of wrong things before. I felt that sense of shame before. I felt guilt before. I've learned to kind of dismiss it a little bit, you know. I'm a little numb to it. They were not numb to it. Bam! It came crashing down on them. Full guilt. Full-fledged guilt and shame. And they were ashamed. They felt guilt. So, what did God do? You remember what God did? Came looking for them. Came looking for them. Asked them a lot of questions, didn't he? Why do you think he asked them questions? Why would God start asking questions? You know, this is the most... You can read so naively, you can read this. Unlike you... You read through this, you go, oh, God, they were able to, God doesn't know everything. God couldn't find them. Come on. It's like the parent doesn't see the top of the two-year-old, his head sticking from behind the couch, and the cookies are missing. And the parent knows, so he goes, Jimmy, where are you? Jimmy, where? That's what it was. He knew exactly what was going on. Why was God questioning him, do you think? Yeah, give them a chance to turn around. Give them a chance to admit they were wrong, acknowledge their guilt. So, do you remember what Adam's first response was? That's right. He must have read the psychology book or something, right? You know, I think it was my parents is why I'm like this, yeah. It was my daddy. He whipped me too hard, and that's why I'm mean to everybody. He blamed somebody else. So Adam blamed, of course, the most convenient. Who else is he going to blame? It's the only person there. Eve. It's her fault. there was one other person there. Who did Eve blame? What? He did. She was blaming a lot of things. God for making her, Satan for tempting her. Yeah. So, you know, blame shifting. That started right out of the gate. We started doing it. What should have been their response? You know, what should they? So, life's going to be different now. There'd be a curse on all the earth. Sin had entered the world. This is an important concept because they're going to have children now. They're going to give something to their children. Their children, and we're going to look at this today, are going to be born separate from God. They're going to inherit something from Adam. Have you guys ever dealt with a two-year-old? Some of you are dealing with some of those things now. So, what was that? You're right. Okay. So you tell a two-year-old, the innocent little child, no innocent, no sin, right? They've never had a chance to do anything wrong. No, so innocent, pure. Honey, you can play here in the living room. You understand? I'm going to go back here. Don't go in the kitchen, okay? Don't go in the kitchen where there's cookies and knives and stuff. Don't go in the kitchen. Okay. When you leave the room, what's going to happen? In the kitchen. Okay. That's natural. That's an Adam nature. This tendency to go your own way, do apart from what you have been instructed to do, to do the wrong thing. Adam nature. Sin nature. They have it. They have it. And if you don't understand that, you will not know how to raise children. You will not know how to live. You will not know how to deal with your own self. You will not know how to deal with your own self. So we're gonna run into that today. So we'll start on the outline. We're not going to cover all this material that you have in front of you, so don't worry. We're going to try to get through the first part. So we had this perfect thing, this perfect setting. But then came sin and death, the curse. Now man's condition. You see, you remember God promised us that the seed of the woman would crush the head of the serpent. You remember that? That's from last week. Didn't we cover that last week? There's something significant about that. The head means authority. He's going to crush the authority. What authority does the serpent have over mankind? You see, man is born in this condition. This is what we got into last week. A slave. Oh no, I can do whatever I want. Well, to some degree. You're born a slave to Satan, or why else would he say, I'm going to crush your head? To sin and to death. And I guess you can argue with me about some of those things, but if you say you're not a slave to sin, then we can sit down and talk. And I've got this little list that I got out of the Bible, and it has these 10 things there. And if I explain that list to you, you will no longer be able to say you're not a slave to sin. I'll point out your sin to you, because I'm smart. No. God just gave this information to us. I can tell you exactly, and I can point your sin out to you. And I'll prove to you you're a slave to sin. I'll also prove to you someday that you're a slave to death. But you're going to die, and there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing you can do about it. So you're a slave to those things. But there's a promise. There's a promise. There is a deliverer coming. There's a deliverance coming. That's the promise that he gave them. So here we have man. So let's talk about this paradox. Remember where we ended up? They're separated from God. But you see, remember God's character we looked at? God desires a relationship with man, and God loves mankind. And then we have this predicament here. Here's man's problem. He's been given this certificate of debt. In the Middle East, in the ancient days, when you owed something, it was spelled out. You got this certificate, stamped, everything official. This is what you owe. Well, in the Bible, there's laws like that too. There's a spiritual law and there's physical law. There's the law of sin and death. Let's go there real quick, Ezekiel 18:20. It's also in Romans 8, too, but we'll go to Ezekiel. Ezekiel 18:20. The one who sins is the one who will die. The child will not share the guilt of the parent, nor the parent to share the guilt of the child. The righteousness of the righteous will be credited to them, and the wickedness of the wicked will be charged against them. The one who sins will die. The soul who sins shall die. It was clear to Adam and Eve. If you sin, you will die. They owed that debt. So there, they owe that debt. The three types of death we already talked about. The debt is not imaginary. Okay? It's not imaginary. There's a spiritual law. There are physical laws and there are spiritual laws. There's a spiritual law clearly stated. If you sin, you die. So let me help you with this. Don't jump ahead to what you understand, partial or full understanding of the answer to that problem. Just accept there's a problem here. Before you jump ahead, there's a problem here. That is, you owe a debt. Every single person owes a debt, the debt of sin. Why? Because that is the result of sin. If you have sinned, you owe this debt of death. The answer will unfold. And so here's God's perspective. Let's go to Deuteronomy 32:4. So man's in a pickle. Deuteronomy 32:4. He is the rock. His works are perfect, and all his ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is he. So you've got this law. You've got God who's loving and kind, but he is absolutely just. So if you went before a judge, and this is the penalty, this is what the law says is the penalty for the crime, and you come before the judge, a criminal, you have done this thing, and you come before and the judge says, you know, I've had a pretty good morning. I feel good today. Sun shining. Forget it. Don't worry that you have you've stolen, you've killed, you've done this. Don't worry about it. Just go on about your way. Would that judge be just? Would that be a just and righteous judge? No. He must, if he's going to do his job, if he's going to do what he's supposed to do, he's going to dish out the appropriate penalty. He's not going to get angry and dash out there and beat the guy up. No, he's going to give him his just penalty. He's going to give him what he has due to him. God is just, holy, and righteous. He's bound by his own law. The punishment for sin is death. The man must die. He is completely loving, yet he is completely and absolutely just. He must enforce the payment. The payment is death. But God is not helpless. God is not helpless. He has a way to be 100% just all the time, but he also has a way to be a 100% merciful and kind and show love. And we need to understand deeply and let this unfold slowly if we are really going to understand our position even now, no matter where you stand before God now. You don't know him. You've never been exposed. Where do you stand for it? Or you may have dealt with all this. We still need to have this full understanding. And we're going to hit this critical point today. And I really want you to understand this, what we're going to get into with Cain and Abel today. So back to our storyline. After eating the fruit, the first thing Adam did, do you remember? They clothed themselves in fig leaves. They covered themselves up. Yet they still felt exposed. They still felt naked, even though they were covered. Why is that? We know from 1 Samuel 16:7. We won't go there right now. You remember, it's this side little note. It says everybody was looking for a king, and they look at physical attributes and all this. It says, but not God, because God looks at the heart. He looks through all the facade. He looks past how physically fit, how feeble, how well you dress, how well you don't. How much money? He looks through and looks past all of that. That none of us really have the ability to look past all those things. But God looks straight to the heart and knows exactly. It says he knows exactly your heart and knows where you stand. So God looks right through their feeble attempts. He looked through their feeble attempts to cover up their sin, and he did not accept He did not accept their method of self-improvement, their method of dealing with sin. And he began to teach them. He began to teach them that they could do nothing outwardly or inwardly to remove the sin problem. They could not do anything to remove the sin problem, the guilt and the shame that they now had. So how could it be? How was it possible for man to be reconciled to God? What are they going to do? So something really significant happened that you're just going to, if you were like me, if I've read this over for years and years, never really, I might have said, what's wrong with fig leaves? You know, they do the job, don't they? What's wrong with that? You know, we can sew them together really good, make something nice. Well, that didn't do for God. Let's go to Genesis 3:21. Here we go. The Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. You know, when we read things in these first few chapters of Genesis, there are times when we read this, we have to look ahead a little bit to understand fully what's going on. We have to look ahead a little bit, take that knowledge from later on and apply it to where we are. Why did God have to use skins of an animal? You see, there was no death, right, up until this time. You know, this is the first death. This is the first physical death recorded. God did it. God killed an animal. I just talked to you about the curse, about lions dragging down gazelles. Do you think God wanted, did he want that? Did he take it lightly that an animal would die? He did not take it lightly that an animal would die. Do you think Adam and Eve took it lightly? You see, things were different then. They had a different relationship with the animals. This was a jarring experience. This animal, they may have not even been an animal they known. And I'll tell you, you can be sure this was not some shoot. This was probably the most innocent, docile of animals that died on this day so they could be covered. Blood was shed. And I'll guarantee you, the reality of this situation was all over them. It struck them. What they had done, and death was the result. An animal had to die for a skin to cover them. It was the first death reality. They were then banished from the garden. The wording of this kind of strikes me. They were banished. They were pushed out of the garden. Is it my picture of this is, I don't want to go. God, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go out there. It's terrible out there. It's hard. Go. This is the result of sin. You are out of the Garden of Eden. You're out there in the world. It's going to be a different life for you now. So let's go here to Genesis 3:22. And the Lord God said, the man has now become like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever. You know, you could read that. There's so many misunderstandings here. You could read that and think, God's intimidated by man. I don't think so. It's not that man was now going to become all-powerful and all-knowing. It's a sad statement. It's a sad restating of the temptation that the enemy, that Satan, had given to them of, hey, you can become like God. And God is saying, yeah, he became like us. He became like God. All right. He now knows evil. Experientially. He has experienced evil. He knows there's something else in the world. And we can't let them eat from the tree of life and live. Can you imagine? What if Hitler lived but was still alive today? What if the worst person... Things do not get better in a sense. Sorry. Things don't really get that much better with age. You notice that... You know, I thought that by the time I was this age, that I would be a lot more docile, that I would be a lot more kind naturally, that I would have learned my lessons. I would not be tempted as much because I would be so much better. It's just not true. I haven't really gotten better with age. You know, it's just, you know what I mean? I'm growing, hopefully, but I still have the same tendencies. Can you imagine if people lived forever in this sinful place? Things would get ugly. God put an end to it. People are not going to live forever. They aren't going to eat from the tree of life. God dealt with that part of it. So, God gave them instructions on how to come to Him. Let's go to Genesis 4:1-2. Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. So, we know that then they've had instructions. They know now. Let's go real quick to this. Let's go to Leviticus 17:11. "For the life of the creature is in the blood, and I have given it to you to make atonement for yourselves on the altar. It is the blood that makes atonement for one's life." So, they have this. God gave, in His mercy, God provided a way for them to escape judgment and to begin to bridge this gap of reconciliation between God and man, restore broken fellowship. But it must be done in God's way and on His terms. Okay? They were to take an animal, an innocent animal. Remember, this is still new and fresh to them. They were to take an innocent animal, and kill it, and let the blood run out on the altar. Normally, the man would have to die. But God was saying, normally, the man would have to die. But God was saying, "I'll accept the death of an animal as a substitute for you. I will put off the judgment of your sin if you come as instructed." So, two aspects to this. There was a graphic illustration of the demands of the law, was it not? We don't want to read to the Old Testament. People, "Oh, God's different now. All this blood and gore." Well, God had a purpose in this. That it was a graphic illustration of the demands of the law, a picture of justice fulfilled. And there would be blood shed. That would be an atonement. That would cover man's sin. God would accept them as if they were righteous. It would be restored fellowship. Okay, back to the story. Now, you guys know the story. Abel was a keeper of the flock. He was a shepherd. He had sheep. That's what he did. That was his thing. Cain was a farmer. He raised crops, fruit, vegetables. Both were equal in God's sight as far as the, you know, with the jobs. It didn't matter. So, Abel came to God with a lamb. You have to picture this. They were instructed already on how to do this. You can follow along. I'm kind of telling the story, but it's in Genesis chapter 4. So, we're not given all the detail. We're just given an outline of the story. But we know from future sacrifices of the way they went about things, of what was done, and God had instructed them. So, Abel came, and he put his hand on the lamb's head. Do you know what that was? Identification. That meant, I'm identified with this animal. That means this should be me. This should be me. I am this animal, in a sense. Then he takes his knife. Remember, they weren't like the farmers. You know, a farmer is pretty numb to death. You know that if you're raised on a farm, death is an everyday thing. It's not, you know, this was not. They were not in this place yet. Cuts the throat of an innocent lamb. This is new. The lamb blood spills out on the altar. And Abel, in this act, is saying to God, "God, I have rebelled against you. I have gone my own way apart from you. Take the death of this animal as a substitute for me. This should be me. I should be the one dying in this place. This should be me. This should be me dying." So I want you to get that picture clearly of the substitute. This was not a casual. This was not something he had rehearsed. This is not something he had done 1,000 times. This was harsh. It was hard. But this was revealing the heart of Abel. Abel turning to God. "Oh, God, I have sinned against you. Take this animal's death and place it in my own as my substitute." Okay. The brother, Cain, he comes to God. This is another one of those things. I read it when I was a kid. I said, "God, what is wrong with Abel? Why didn't you accept Abel? He worked hard. He may have brought his best fruit. Now, I've heard people say he didn't bring, read into it, they didn't bring the best fruit. I think it's likely he brought the best. He brought the best that he had. He worked hard for it. He brought it to God. He brought the sacrifice, and God said, no, I do not accept your offering. I do not accept your offering. Cain said, all right, then, God. All right. Turned away. Turned away from God. God went and asked him questions. Cain, if you came in the way I instructed, would I not accept you? Come on. We have no record of his response to God. His heart and his mind, he turned away from God. Because in the beginning, his heart was not right. He did not come in the way God instructed. This is the first act of religion in the Bible, and God detested it. It was man figuring his own way, trying to be good enough for God. In our eyes, it was fine what he did. He didn't do anything wrong. In God's eyes, it was an abomination. He was trying to make himself, he was working hard to make himself acceptable to God. That's not what God asked for. He said, you come to me in the way I've instructed. You come acknowledging you deserve death. You come with blood. You come with death. So death is the punishment for sin. I want you to understand it deeply. I want you to feel it. And we have thousands upon thousands of sacrifices throughout the Old Testament. And God saying, do you understand yet? Do you understand yet? Do you understand yet who I am? Do you understand my love and my mercy? Do you understand my judgment? Do you understand my holiness? I want you to understand this. If you're going to relate to me, you need to know this very, very foundational issue. Now, death is the payment for sin. There must be a substitute or you can pay yourself. That is God's message. And he wanted us to understand it because he repeated it throughout the ages of the Old Testament. So here we have Cain and Abel, born, separated from God, but God provided a way for them to come back. We also know what happened next, don't we? What did Cain do? He was so angry that he killed his brother Abel. And do you not think that Lucifer was involved in this? And I think Lucifer probably said, oh, the promised seed of the woman? Got him. I killed the one. I got control of the other. I don't have to worry about that seed crushing my head. Psych. Seth was born. And Seth was going to be the line through which deliverance would come. So Adam and Eve, they lived to be... You know, we sometimes... This thing bothers us a bit, but we've studied this where... We don't know this absolutely for sure, but there was a different environment. Most likely, you remember we talked about that there was this greenhouse effect throughout the earth, and it's easy to see the evidence for this. Go up to Wyoming, and you dig in the earth, and you will see fossils of lush vegetation. Well, that doesn't exist out there in the sagebrush high desert of Wyoming anymore, and it's way, way too cold for that stuff. There's a different environment, and there's protective covering, and there were not the genetic mutations that would cause so much sickness and death. And so with the result of all these things, people lived to be these long ages. And Adam lived, I forgot what it was, 900 years, something along those lines. But then he finally did die. He was removed from his life source. He finally did die. And I think we're going to stop there because something else is going to happen in the story next that impacts just about everything you see. When you look out the windows, when you look at the mountains, when you look at the Grand Canyon, we'll see what happened in these next series we're going to look at that affected and impacted all this.